It's At The Letters for Tuesday, November 26th. I'm Arden Zwelling, joined as always by Ben Nicholson-Smith. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Thanks for joining us, Ben. We haven't talked in a while. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well, yeah. Last time you and I were working a baseball game, it was the ALCS. Very far from the Blue Jays world at that point in time. And since then, had the chance to do a lot of playoffs, which was great. GM meetings, that was interesting. Got back home, got sick for like a week. Now I'm feeling better. Here we are. So that's kind of the short recap. But how are you doing?
I'm good. The good news is we didn't miss much, because the Blue Jays really haven't done much this offseason. Luis De Los Santos is now with the Mets. Yenesis Cabrera was DFA'd. Jordan Romano, Dylan Tate were both non-tendered. That's about the extent of it. We're still very much in rumor, speculation, and innuendo season. It feels like, Ben, we're not going to really get much in terms of substantial moves until Juan Soto comes off the board.
Yeah, I mean, Soto is at the center of everything, of course, this offseason, and it connects to the Jays as well. To what degree, we'll get into. We'll discuss that, I'm sure. But yeah, Soto's in the middle of everything. Scott Boras is in the middle of everything. Boras represents so many of the top players this offseason, even more than usual. Seems like he might be a bit more motivated to get some action going early in the offseason, as we saw with the Yusei Kikuchi deal. Congrats to Yusei Kikuchi, by the way. Nice deal with the Angels. You know, we'll see, right? Like, the Jays, you know, so far, they've gotten worse. They got rid of Yenesis Cabrera. They got rid of Jordan Romano. They have a lot of work to do. They know that. They're going to make moves. That's a fact. Are they going to be good? Are they going to make fans happy? Are they going to lead to a playoff run in 2025? I have no idea, but they will definitely add pitching. They will definitely add a hitter, and we'll see what it looks like.
Yeah, I like the analyzing the Soto business, because it's just like so straightforward. There's no question of, oh, how's this guy going to fit on the roster? Like, how, you know, is he going to play against righties or lefties? Like, where is he going to hit in the batting order? Like, all that stuff's out the window. It's just generational talent, once in a lifetime free agent, like hitters this good on Hall of Fame tracks do not hit the open market at the age of 26.
And Soto hits that one well to left center field. That's going to get down and bounce into the wall.
And Vladdy and Soto, two of the best young players in the game, having some fun.
Of course you pursue him if you have the means. Like, of course you throw everything at it if you have the resources. And the Blue Jays have the resources. So the reporting from across baseball is that the Blue Jays are one of five teams who are at the table, along with the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers, and the Red Sox. And the reporting also is that offers, if they have not already been made, will be made soon. And you're not at this stage, like, you're not at that table right now if you're not prepared to make an offer, which means that at some point the Blue Jays are going to send like an e-doc to scott@boriscorp.com with, you know, a 9-figure deal in it that starts with a 6. It's something that would have been like completely preposterous to suggest for the first 40 years of the franchise. But yet here we are.
You just outed Scott Boras's email address right there. Wow.
That's where I get him. I don't know. I don't know if it's actually him. It might just be an intern.
Yeah. So the Blue Jays have interest in Juan Soto. Obviously, he's such a good player. This would be a special circumstance where, you know, it's not dissimilar to the Shohei Ohtani situation from last year, where the Blue Jays don't necessarily have that money to reallocate. If Juan Soto ends up going to the New York Mets, they don't turn around and get 45, 46, 47 million per year to spend on other players. But in the case that Soto is somehow available to the Jays, then that would be a special circumstance. So He's an incredible player, as you said. I don't think we really need to explain that to anyone, but the guy's amazing. Like, his lifetime on base percentage is .421, and he's just entering his age 26 season. So, you know, this is, you're buying a Hall of Fame plaque. You're buying someone who probably still has 8 or 9 seasons of prime offensive production ahead of him. You know, you can look at the comps, anyone from a Joey Votto to a Ted Williams. Those are legit fair comps for Juan Soto. not quite Ted Williams level, but you know, if anyone's ever going to be comped to Ted Williams, it's going to be Juan Soto. So this guy's amazing. He's if anything, entering his prime, total command of the strike zone, total command of the at-bats that he has. So, you know, to me, we can do like a dollars per war thing where you kind of, you try to map it out and try to figure out, okay, what's this guy going to be worth? And there's value in doing that, I think. But end of the day, this is an auction. And if you want to win the rights to Juan Soto, you're going to have to pay the most money and offer the most money. And I think that what's going to draw him in is money, because all these teams are pretty competitive with the possible exception of the Jays. But all these teams were winning teams last year. All these teams were really, really good. And so, yeah, I think it's going to end up being money that's the deciding factor. And I think it's essentially an auction.
Yeah, I think that his priorities would go number one, overall value of the contract. Number two, the structure of the contract, just in terms of like what opt-outs or what player control you give Soto, obviously the term. And then number three is like, just where does he want to play? You know, environmental preference. Like, what city does he want to live in? Where does he want to have spring training? Who does he want to play with? Which franchise, you know, seems like it has the best chances of winning and is going to surround him with good players in order to chase World Series, and in order to, you know, strengthen that Hall of Fame case with a couple of rings and some more like terrific postseason performances. But that's only if like the value and structure are equal between two teams. Otherwise, yeah, I think you're right. I think it literally is just he's going to go to the highest bidders. So if you're at that table, if you're one of those five teams, like you're not coming in just saying, yeah, you know, if the market collapses, we'll be here with 400. You know, you're coming in with a proper competitive top tier first class offer, which like the Blue Jays, it seems, are making. All that said, and I'm sorry to be the one to say this, I think it is extremely unlikely that the Blue Jays sign Juan Soto. Like, of those five teams, I would put them no higher than fourth in terms of likelihood of signing Juan Soto, and I think they're realistically fifth.
I would put them fifth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, where would you put the percentage likelihood of the Blue Jays signing Juan Soto based on what we know now?
Okay, so this is from having conversations with folks in the industry, and you know, some of this is guesswork because ultimately it comes down to, you know, as you said, a few emails, Scott Boras, Juan Soto, and a closed door meeting that we're not invited to. But, you know, I've talked to various people in the industry about this, both on the team side and on the player side. So to me, I would guess, this is a guess, but I would guess that it's like 5% total unknown, 5% Blue Jays, 5% Red Sox, 10% Dodgers, that's 25 now, and I'll say 30% Yankees, 45% Mets, something like that. Like, I think the Mets are, based on the conversations that I've had, just perceived as the clear favorite, the deepest pockets, the most motivated, clear willingness to spend over the CBT, clear willingness to do it year after year, clear willingness to just spend, spend, spend. This is comments out of Steve Cohen's mouth that he has said, like, it just lines up so well. So to me, the Mets are the number one, followed by the Yankees, kind of followed by the field.
Yeah, I think that you've divided the pie well. If I was dividing it, I would have been more aggressive on the Mets and put them up to 50 or 60, I should say. And I would have gone even lighter on the Blue Jays and Red Sox. Like, I think it's a less than 5% chance that the Blue Jays sign Juan Soto. So, you know, those who have been listening to us for the last 11 years and are familiar with our track record, you know, let that just kind of inform your expectations and how high you get your hopes. But look, like, it's fun, you know, for fans to follow this and to be in the Juan Soto rumors, and to, you know, it's certainly good for business in the old attention economy to put, you know, Blue Jays and Juan Soto in a headline or in a podcast description. And it's not like there's any games being played right now. So if you're a baseball fan, like, you know, it's good that the Blue Jays are involved here. Like, this isn't a just, oh, you're just being used as leverage, like, oh, everybody's laughing at you or whatever. I mean, this is a serious bid that's being made. made, and I think it's being taken seriously by Juan Soto's side, just as Shohei Ohtani took the Blue Jays bid seriously on his side. He wasn't just trying to use the Blue Jays as leverage. In every free agent signing where there is more than one bidder, the team that doesn't acquire the player is leveraged by definition. You know, just forget about all that, and there's no opportunity cost here, because as you said, like, Yusei Kikuchi is the only guy who's come off the board, so it's not like the Blue Jays are missing other opportunities. They might as well pursue this as aggressively as they are right now, but I do think it's very important for everyone to remember that it is extraordinarily unlikely that Juan Soto is playing for the Blue Jays on opening day.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's very unlikely. I think it's a low probability shot. Are they at the table? Yes. But who benefits most from the Blue Jays being at the table? It's probably Scott Boras. It's probably Juan Soto, you know. And to compare this to the Shohei thing, which is the inevitable comp, and it's the right comp to make, but they are very different situations at the same time. And I think that I know people are going to disagree with what I'm about to say, but in my opinion, the Blue Jays and Shohei Ohtani, there was real mutual interest based on all the conversations that I've had. And I keep coming back to the fact that Shohei Ohtani wanted to see their friggin' gym. You know, he wanted to fly across the country and see what kind of like medicine balls they had and what kind of treadmills they had. Like, that's how interested he was in the Blue Jays. I still to this day don't think that that was just a leverage play. I think Shohei Ohtani legitimately had interest in the Blue Jays. Now, does Juan Soto legitimately have interest in the Blue Jays? I have nothing to say that he does. You know what I mean? Beyond the possibility of them offering the biggest contract in baseball history. You know, is that 630 over 14? Is that 675 over 15? Does it get over 700? I don't know. But beyond the possibility of some massive, massive contract, I don't have any reason to believe that Juan Soto is or isn't interested in the Blue Jays. And in fact, if he's asking the Yankees about their player development, as he is reported to have done, you know, this is probably going to be the toughest sell of the five teams who are rumored to be in that mix, because the Blue Jays are the only one of those five teams that was a last place team in 2024. They are the only one of those teams that doesn't have a long-term fixture in place to pair with a Juan Soto in the way that the Red Sox have Devers, and they have all these prospects coming up, and the Yankees, of course, have Judge. The Mets have Lindor. The Dodgers have all kinds of players. The Jays don't have that. Vlad Jr. is not extended. Juan Soto, you look at 2026 and beyond, it's a little bit of an abyss right now. And it's not to say the Jays can't turn it around. It's not to say that better things couldn't happen, but it's a little unknown. So I think it would be the toughest sell to bring Juan Soto to Toronto out of all those teams. And so all of this points to, I think that Juan Soto loves having the Blue Jays involved. I think that Scott Boras loves tossing them out there as this threat, this lurking giant. He loves mentioning that the Blue Jays are, you know, this possible contender and they're a team to be reckoned with. That benefits Scott Boras. Is it actually true? Is it actually going to happen? I still think Juan Soto is a Met at the end of all of this.
Yeah, if it's a question of like who does the best job developing players, like he should go be an LA Dodger. And just like form the most insane top half of a batting order anyone has ever seen, where it goes like Shohei, Mookie, Freddie, and Juan, like that they might win 120 games if he signs with the Dodgers. But like, yeah, I agree with you that it's just going to be overall value on the contract. And I think that the Mets owner, Steve Cohen, is extremely motivated to add Juan Soto. So I think that's likely where he ends up. Now, that doesn't mean that the Blue Jays aren't going to keep splashing around at the top end of the market and try to come away with another one of the premier free agents this winter. You know, an interesting sort of question that I've had is, you know, if there's the sort of one-time allocation for a unique opportunity, such as Soto, Ohtani last year, that was the case with Freddie Freeman when the Jays pursued him. So, you know, conversely, would there be a one-time allocation for, say, two first-tier free agents who make up the value of what you're going to give those guys? So, like, if it's Corbin Burnes and Alex Bregman, you know, can the Blue Jays front office go to Rogers and say, hey, like, we're going to sign Corbin Burnes and Alex Bregman. We project that, you know, they're going to produce as much or even a bit more war than Juan Soto next year, but we need like $450 million to do it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think, so I don't know the answer to that. My read is that if they don't get Juan Soto, then they could get one other top free agent, be that a Corbin Burns, Max Fried, for example. I haven't heard anyone say that, hey, we could go out and get like two of these guys. Doesn't mean it couldn't happen. Doesn't mean that things can't change as the offseason develops. But my impression is that there is the possibility of a big allocation for one big free agent. Maybe it's a Soto, you know, in that small, small, small percent chance. Maybe it is a Max Fried in a bigger percent chance. And I think on paper, there's a case to be made baseball ops wise that, hey, let's get two of these guys because there is a lot of work to be done. But I wouldn't be holding my breath that that's a big possibility.
The interesting thing there then is if you are going and getting a Burns, a Fried, a Bregman, whatever, I mean, you're looking at $25 to $30 million of payroll being eaten up by that individual, and you have so much more work to do. And we expect that payroll budget is going to be around the same as it was last season. That's what Mark Shapiro has told us to expect. So I sort of wonder how the Blue Jays would make all those puzzle pieces fit if they are eating up like so much of the budget they have to work with this offseason in one player and then still need four relievers and another, you know, then if it's a pitcher, a starting pitcher that they sign, like at least two other position players.
Right. So I think that's where, like, if they were to sign Fried, for example, that would push the payroll beyond what their kind of standard projection is. Right. Because as you said, with Mark Shapiro, the comments that he made at the end of the season, payroll expected to be in a similar range to what it was in 2024. And in 2024, they were around $240 million, just under the competitive balance tax. So you project that ahead 1 year, let's call it 240 as a ballpark figure. Right now, they're committed after non-tendering Jordan Romano, which we'll get to, and after cutting Dylan Tate and Yenesis Cabrera from the roster, they're around 200. So that should give them $35 to $40 million in your kind of standard offseason. That's where you sign Luis Severino, that's 17. You sign Tyler O'Neill, that's 14. That takes you to 31. Then you sign another reliever for 5 and another reliever for 2. And okay, now we're at 38 and your offseason's done. That's actually kind of the most likely offseason is the Blue Jays sign a starting pitcher. They sign a bat that's not Alex Bregman, that's not Juan Soto. And they sign a couple relievers that are not expensive, that are not the biggest names out there. I think that's the most likely scenario. That's probably the 75% chance it ends up being like that. And then if that's the case, they have to crush those moves. They have to nail it because...
yeah.
You know, it's not easy. I have to thread a needle, right? And for all this talk about Soto or Bregman or Fried, and yes, they're in on those guys, but so are a lot of other teams. And just because you are willing to go, let's say for argument's sake, and I'm making this up, but let's say you're willing to go 156 over 6 for Max Fried. Well, hey, if the Washington Nationals are going to 175, there are a lot of teams out there that are going to be motivated. The Boston Red Sox might go to 180. You kind of back off at a certain point. And then you have to go back to the drawing board and make it work and nail those smaller acquisitions.
Yeah, you need like a Semien Ray outcome. Like you need something like that. Plus, you need all of those 10 wins internally that we've heard the Blue Jays feel like they can get this season that they didn't have last season. Like you need to squeeze everything out of that sponge. And I don't know that that's realistic. Like I do think the Blue Jays particularly in the bullpen are due for some regression this year, but I mean, I don't think it'll be enough to make up the, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's like 15 or 16 wins that they would have needed in order to get into the postseason. Like they're, like you said, they're going to have to be perfect. Like they're going to have to nail everything. They're going to have to get good health. They're going to have to get good luck.
And then they have to add at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
You know, they have to have better developmental stories coming up through their system that help them, that help reinforce the team. Have to be guys popping off the 40-man roster that helped them in May, that helped them in July. You know, so that's fine. That's the path to a wild card. You have to have a lot of those things go right. But, you know, yeah, it's not easy. They're not in an easy spot right now.
It's funny because it's actually more interesting to me just as an exercise to try to piece it together with like five different dudes, right? And to like try to be the smartest front office in the league. Cause like, yeah, the easy thing to do is to give Juan Soto $700 million and boom, you add eight wars to your protection. Yeah. But to try to like make
for
up
years
that.
Years to come.
Yeah. Oh, no, exactly. But to try to make up that eight war with like three other guys who collectively are going to earn like, three quarters what Soto will, that's almost more interesting to me. But that is way harder to do than just signing Juan Soto.
Absolutely. That's incredibly hard. And, you know, sometimes too, you might actually have a great idea. Like you might actually have an idea that would get you partway there. Like the Brent Rooker thing that we talked about, I don't know, a couple months ago now.
Yeah.
And I think that's an awesome idea. And I think there are probably people within the Blue Jays front office that thought that was an awesome idea. But the A's also like Brent Rooker. Guess what? They get to make that call. They're holding on to Brent Rooker. He's not going anywhere. So this is, it's incredibly hard to make that work. And this is where, of course, you get back to the simplicity of like, yeah, adding Juan Soto, who's like a seven, eight war player for the next 8 years. That's huge for your franchise. That's huge as a building block for trying to be good in 2029 or 2031. But you know, it's 2025. You have to take care of first. And the real likelihood is Soto is not going to be a Blue Jay. So they need to find better contingency plans than they had last offseason when it didn't work out with Ohtani, because they didn't find good enough solutions after that. And we all saw how it played out on the field. Doesn't mean that that's going to repeat itself in 2025, but they've got to make sure that they have some good backup plans in place.
So, which opens like another philosophical question, which could really be its own podcast. But if the Blue Jays are going to go the route of a smattering of mid-tier free agents, like that 75% likelihood that you were talking about, if it's some combination of Sean Manaea and Jock Peterson and Josh Rojas or whatever, like those types of guys.
Exactly. That's exactly what I think is realistic.
So that would be like their plan D offseason. If you're going to go that route, and we saw how it turned out last season, do you not have to open up the discussion of, hey, should we just bite the bullet, stomach it, swallow a tough pill, and blow this thing up and trade our like veterans with value to try to get back some young players, use 2025 to assess which kids are going to be actually a part of our future, try to make a really good pick within the top five of the draft this year, and then reload in 2026 by making like a big play for Kyle Tucker next offseason or Dylan Cease or whoever, and try to do a quick reset with 2025 being a like purposeful step back year.
Yeah. I think, and the time to lean into that could have been at the deadline when, you know, could they have traded Chad Green as well? Could they have traded Chris Bassett as well? I don't even think it means you have to punt fully on 2025. I think that you could do a reset where you still extend Vlad and you still try to find some really good players on one-year deals. But maybe it's Walker Buehler and you embrace a little more risk and, you know, a little bit more volatility, as opposed to, you know, let's say it's Luis Severino, who's seen as a bit more predictable. Yeah, you can take those shots. I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, clearly the Blue Jays have decided that they want to win in 2025. I'm sure there are business ops reasons for that. The other thing is Mark Shapiro, as far as we know, is not under contract beyond 2025. So, you know, that might be another factor in all of this. But regardless, this path forward that the team has chosen is to try to win this year. I think for the long-term benefit of the team, there is a very strong case to be made for that reset. But at the same time, it's not going to happen.
Right. I think that if the Blue Jays sat down and objectively stripped away everything and just looked at it as a case study, I think strategically it would make a lot of sense if they are missing out on those top tier guys, right? Like if you can sign a Fried or a Bregman or whoever, like, great. Okay. Like that is a real legit piece. But if you're looking at like Kyle Gibson and Kike Hernandez or something, like you really have
they
to ask
be better than that. So, yeah.
I mean, it's the first name that came to mind. I don't know. Jerks and Profar, whoever, right? Like you really have to ask some hard questions then about how realistic it is that you know, you're going to be competitive and get to the postseason in 25, which, hey, like we've seen pretty unimpressive teams sneak in as the third wild card in recent years. Like, that's not impossible. But then you get to the playoffs and you're looking at, you know, Brendan Little, Chad Green, and Eric Swanson setting up Finnegan, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and you're like, how are we going to get through the postseason?
Yeah. It's tough, right? Because let's face it, this AL East is really tough. The Red Sox are a team on the rise. I mean, with Campbell, with Marcelo Meyer coming up, with Teal, like they're and Roman Anthony, like they have a ton of prospects coming. You know, we all know how good the Orioles are. The Rays are a team that's just stacked with pitching depth. So, and the Yankees, well, actually, I think the Yankees are actually kind of screwed. But yeah, you know, it's still a good division. It's still a really good division. So, you know, are you a wild card team then? Does that mean you have to win four playoff rounds? As you said, with that bullpen, you're going to win four playoff rounds with that bullpen. And look, strange things happen all the time. And I, you know, I guess I'm torn when it comes to this, because at the same time, there's a part of me that says, go for it. And there's a part of me that applauds the Angels for trying to win and trying to add and raise the floor and just see what happens in a format where so many teams make the playoffs. It's really not that hard to make the playoffs. But, you know, strategically, long term, I do think there's that case. And then in the short term, it's like, you know what? Of course there are scenarios where the Blue Jays make the playoffs next year. Of course that pathway is available to them. And so the kind of competitor side and the people on this team, they're like, let's try to win. Let's try to make something of this. Let's try to go for it.
Yeah, I would never advocate for like a full-scale tear down and rebuild. Like, I think that in this reset scenario, to me, it would be 1 year where you're kind of figuring out with the kids and you're trying to, you know, get something back for Chris Bassett and paying like half the freight and trying to do something similar with Kevin Gausman. You might get to a point in this scenario where you're like DFAing George Springer. You know, like these are the kind of moves that would come with this kind of strategy. But I think that the Blue Jays just need to find a way to either extend their current competitive window or have just a more clear and direct path into their next competitive window. And I don't really see either of those scenarios on the table right now. That could all change in several weeks when the Blue Jays make all these fantastic moves in the offseason and change all of our minds. But as things are presently constructed right now, without adding a top tier free agent this winter, or like you said, a rooker type of player via trade, I mean, you are looking at this being a massively pivotal year in the final year of Vlad and Bo prior to their free agency.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a huge, huge year. It's not easy. It is not going to be easy. And the Blue Jays have acknowledged this. I mean, Ross Atkins has said, I need to be better. You know, he needs to have a good offseason right here. Like, if I'm looking at this as Ross Atkins, it's funny, right? Because there's this understandable desire to find bargains and to be efficient and to make sure that you're getting the most out of every $1 million you spend. And I understand that. But I also think there's a case to be made if you're Ross Atkins this offseason, where, you know, presumably his job is on the line, one would think, going into this 2025 season. I think there's a case to be made for, you know what, toss aside the dollars per war for a moment, toss aside the quote unquote bargains. And I'm not saying, you know, don't have any patience at all whatsoever, but I am saying just get one player that you really, really believe in. Get one player that you are just so convinced that he's going to have a really big 2025, help your team. Then you wait back, you get some bargains around that, you fill in the team, you make sure that you have some balance to the ball club. But I just think there's a risk to waiting too long to getting, okay, we're going to be patient, we're going to get all these bargains, but do you get the guy that you really want? Do you get the player that you really, really need and believe in? And at a certain point, it's kind of going on a limb. At a certain point, it's kind of going beyond the projections, going beyond what your internal metrics say, and saying, I actually believe this player, this dude, this is the one that is going to change things for us, and making a bet on someone. And I think there's a case to be made for doing that if you're the Blue Jays this offseason.
In the words of Andrew Friedman, if you're rational about every free agent, you're going to finish second or third for every free agent.
Right.
And so that you are selling me on your opinion there. I feel like the reality of the Blue Jays front office is that they are going to be very disciplined, and they're actually going to have a ton of faith in their model and their projections. Yeah. And they're going to let that be a huge basis of their decision making.
I agree.
They're going to stick to the like walk away points that they set prior to the negotiation and told themselves they would not move. And they aren't going to make deals where they don't feel like they are getting value. Like, they're not going to make deals where they're like, whew, like, they're not going to take a haircut on anything. They're not going to try, you know, be somewhere where it's likely that they're losing value. They're not going to take huge risks on health where, you know, the outcome could be like a disastrous albatross contract. Like, I just think that the way they make decisions, whether you agree with it or not, is just unfailingly disciplined and rational and pragmatic. So I would be surprised if they did what you are suggesting.
I agree with you. I would be surprised too. But I just think, like, you know, baseball executives, even the most measured baseball executives, like, they have takes. They have players that they really believe in, you know? Like, they have sometimes really strong takes. And it's like, they have to step away from that. They make sure to be disciplined. They make sure to be measured. My thought would just be, man, like, at a certain point, I'm not saying analytics are bad. Analytics are awesome. They're great. They're here to stay. They should be. They're super helpful. They're there for a reason. But I just think at a certain point, like, do you really believe that Alex Bregman is just the guy? Is he the guy? Or is it Tyler O'Neill? Or is it Luis Severino? Or I mean Max Fried? Whoever you think really is that player that you really believe in, I would say just spend more and you know, have it be a quote unquote bad deal on paper, get the player you want, and then fill in around the edges later and get the bargains then.
Well, and you mentioned it kind of considering the contract status of the higher ups in the Blue Jays front office and kind of considering, you know, just some of the tenor of the fan base at this time. Like, 2025 is a massive year for a lot of people. And so you would want to be really sure that you built the best team possible and that you didn't hold yourself back from like going that extra mile, getting that extra win, like building in that extra little bit of buffer against bad luck and uncertainty and all the crazy stuff that happens in baseball. If the Blue Jays have another offseason where it's Turner, IKF, and Kiermaier and Yariel Rodriguez, I just don't think that that's going to be good enough. And I just don't see how anyone in that front office is going to feel really comfortable and confident that they've done the best job possible to put the team in position to be successful.
Yeah. And look, you know, they want to win. They want to win really badly.
Oh, yeah.
And they, you know, they think they thought and believed that those moves would help them win. It just didn't happen. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, obviously this is all within reason. I'm not saying go and offer, you know, Tyler O'Neill $22 million a year or something. But I just think, like, you know, there is some room for that sort of personal conviction. That's why it's a GM who makes the moves and not a spreadsheet. And you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm very intrigued to see what happens. They have a ton of possibilities ahead of them right now. Nothing's really been crossed off the list except for Yusei. So technically technically their perfect offseason is still there for them.
Plan A is still available. But it is just so interesting how like all of these lines are kind of colliding on 2025 with, you know, Shapiro, Atkins, final year of Vlad, final year of Bo, maybe the like final years that you can expect, you know, like a Springer or a Gausman to give positive value. That's harsh on Gausman, but, you know, for Springer, yes. And then maybe the final year you can expect Gausman to be like close to a number one level guy. I mean, he's turned 34. How long can he keep doing this? All these things are just converging in 2025, which feels like this year that we've been talking about forever, right? Like, it feels like we've been talking about like the decision points around Guerrero and Bichette for years and years, and we have been, literally. But like, we're here now. It's happening. It's in front of us, and the team is coming off of a massively disappointing year when they didn't make the postseason, and there's a ton of pressure on the front office, coaching staff, everybody with the club to get there this year and to rectify the situation. It just feels like a, you know, these words get thrown around so much and there's so much hyperbole, but I actually really do think that this is a massively pivotal year for the franchise. And I think it's really like beginning this offseason with the decision of, if we miss on the top tier guys, what do we do? And I wonder if the Blue Jays just leave the door open a crack to the step back reset scenario.
Wow, that would really surprise me. But just on Gausman real quick, because you mentioned him, I don't think we touched on this as the season came to a close, but his strikeout percentage, the percentage of batters that he strikes out, it dropped by 10 percentage points last year. 31.1% in 2023, 21% in 2024. That is a big drop off. And he's still a good pitcher. I still think that he's going to be a good pitcher next year. But to your point, is this guy a game one playoff starter? Well, maybe this is part of the reason the Blue Jays are looking at Max Fried, right? Maybe this is part of the reason that they've been telling free agent starting pitchers, like, we are motivated, you know, please keep us in the loop. Don't make some deal without us. Like, we want to be in on this, because they might see and realize that their quote unquote top end guys, whether it's Berríos, whether it's Gausman, whether it's Bassett, those guys from a stuff and strikeout whiff percentage standpoint, they have taken steps back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, why are the Blue Jays being aggressive in the starting pitching market? Because of the dirty little secret that Steamer currently projects them to get 10.5 wins from their starters, which ranks 23rd in baseball. And you are not going to get to the postseason with the 23rd best staff in baseball. Like, the Blue Jays need to get better on the starting pitching front. You know, Chris Bassett's a free agent after this season. Kevin Gausman's a free agent after the next one. They're both in their mid-30s. Like, you spoke about some of the decline we've already seen from those two guys. Those two guys have been durable, but, you know, you're only durable until you're not. And the Blue Jays just need to improve their starting pitching situation, not only this year, but start like planning for like these departures and this decline that we're talking about in future years, preferably with a, you know, a multi-year contract for a really good starter.
Yeah, spend to do it. That's it's a good use of their money. I think the starting pitching idea, it's a really good idea. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that's a good call on the part of the Blue Jays front office to do that. You know, the Jays have had a lot of good ideas. Going after Shohei Ohtani, amazing idea, right? Like, amazing
concept.
Yeah. Yeah, incredible, like, incredible concept. Going after Juan Soto, also a great idea. Going after starting pitching, they have good ideas. They have to cross the bridge to executing. They have to cross the bridge to actually getting ink to paper, getting this done, and that's what we'll see, you know, if they can do that in the next, you know, couple months here.
Would you say it's not the Tri-League, but it is in fact the Greg Dunn League?
That is fair to say.
Is that what you're suggesting? We're going to step away, but when we come back, we should talk about Jordan Romano's DFA, the Blue Jays bullpen in general, and a few players more specifically in free agency. All that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. Thanks for listening. It's been a while since we talked, and Ben and I are itching to get some takes off of our chests. So we're going to do a couple of rapid fire ones here, and let me kick it off here. As Ben and Shai reported from the GM meetings, the Blue Jays have interest in Max Fried. And Max Fried is a very good pitcher. He would be a great addition to the Blue Jays. If the Blue Jays sign him, I would say that is, you know, that is great. That makes a lot of sense. But if I have to choose between Max Fried at 5 years, 150, and Corbin Burnes at 7 years, 200, I'm taking Corbin Burnes every single time. I think that the pitcher who the Blue Jays should be really aggressive in their pursuit of is Corbin Burnes. I think that, assuming they don't get Juan Soto, that is the second best player that they can come away with in this free agent class. And just as far as Burnes versus Fried goes, Burnes has a way, way, way better fastball. He gets more swing and miss. He's been more durable. He'll age better. He has repeatedly shown an ability to make adjustments, even if he loses some velo. There's a bunch of different ways he can go to still give you utility later into the deal. And I just think that Max Fried is a little bit of a ticking time bomb health-wise. You know, Blake Snell gets dumped on for his durability, but Blake Snell has two more starts than Max Fried since 2021. So I think that we should discuss Max Fried in the same way that we discuss Blake Snell. Like I said, obviously he's talented. Obviously he gets a ton of outs, really super low ERA. He would be a good addition for the Blue Jays, but I think that it is a slam dunk that the Blue Jays should actually be really heavily after Corbin Burnes over Fried.
I like a nice little hot take here, hot stove hot take. I was throwing some, are you on Blue Sky? I'm on Blue Sky. I started throwing out some unpopular baseball takes on there. And, you know, it was kind of fun. Like I said that I think the Yankees have the best road jersey in baseball, which I guess is a hot take because people didn't seem to agree with me on that. But in any case, I would say I agree with your Corbin Burnes take. I'm persuaded.
Yeah, I just like when I look for a pitcher, I look for somebody with a really dominant fastball because I think it's just the best building block that you can have. And Corbin Burnes, I mean, he'll call it a cutter, but like I just think he has one of the best fastballs in baseball, and he's a competitor, obviously. And he's just durable. Like he checks every box for me as a pitcher that you should pursue. So I'd be willing to go like more term and more dollars for him than I would for Fried. I think, you know, they're both around the same age, but like I said, if Fried's going to cost you $5,150, give me Burnes at $7,200.
Nice. All right. I'm going to throw out a take here as well. Less of a spicy take, I guess, but just maybe more of an update just as far as talking about the Jays. We haven't talked on this platform in a couple months, and I think it's worth just mentioning Vlad Jr. and where things stand, because, you know, in 12 months' time, Vlad Jr. will be the headliner of the free agent class along with Kyle Tucker. But really, it would be Vlad Jr., given his youth and given his offensive ability, who headlines next year's free agent class if the Blue Jays don't sign him to an extension. And as of this moment, I have no reason to believe that there is meaningful traction between the two sides on an extension at present moment. Doesn't mean that can't happen. At this point, my guess would be if there are meaningful talks to be had, it probably happens in spring training or toward that arbitration window, and the Blue Jays will have to finalize a 2025 number for Vlad Jr. Around the $28 million mark in what would be his final year of arbitration. So, you know, maybe late January would be a window for that as of this moment. Just kind of curious to see where the Juan Soto stuff lands, because it's not a perfect comp for Vladdy. Soto's a better hitter. I think everyone can very easily see that. But from a youth standpoint, that's where it gets really comparable, right? Because you're talking about two guys who are in their mid-20s as opposed to their late 20s or their 30s. That's going to be an important comp. And probably when Soto signs for whatever it is, 630 over 14, that's probably going to be a motivator for Vladdy to ask for a huge amount, whether it's with the Blue Jays or as a free agent.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me for Vlad to sign an extension right now unless he gets absolutely top dollar, like just a first class offer that is like as good as his value is going to be on the open market. And like really, like now isn't the time that you would have super substantive discussions about an extension anyway, because the Blue Jays are trying to figure out an offseason. Like they've got basically a fifth of a roster to add. So, you know, they're working free agency, they're working trades, they're trying to construct things. Like you said, it's, you know, spring training is when things die down and when they could actually like sit down and hammer out a deal. I do think that is likely to be the last realistic opportunity for them to do it. I think once the season starts, games start being played, Vlad, you know, resumes mashing and is, you know, crushing homers out of George Steinbrenner Field against the Rays. I think it just gets extremely unlikely that an extension gets done at that point. Look, it's not the worst thing in the world. Vlad wouldn't be the first player to like become a free agent and then rejoin the team that he left. We've also like seen examples of really good franchises like the Dodgers and the Braves who have been willing to let superstars walk, you know, and have been willing to say goodbye. It's a really tough thing to do, but they've done it and they've found ways to continue winning. For the record, I think the Blue Jays should extend Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I would absolutely, praise that move if it happens. But, you know, we always look at this through the Blue Jays lens. We so seldom talk about it through Vlad's lens. He has all of the leverage right now entering his walk here, coming off of like an MVP caliber campaign. Like you said, he's going to be young when he hits the market. Like Juan Soto is going to reset the top end of the market, which is only going to raise his boat along with it. Unless he gets the like perfect dream deal that he's looking for right now, I would advise him not to sign. Cash his like $29 million salary this year, take his like $50 million of career earnings and walk into free agency and let 29 other teams bid on him.
Yeah, we do this all the time and the names have shifted over time, but you know, Vladdy is a year younger than the dude who just won Rookie of the Year, Luis Gil. You know, like that's full awesome. Year younger.
It's amazing that we're still finding those things, right? Oh, like we've been finding those little factoids for so long and we're still finding them.
Like Luis Gil, he's a young pitcher in this league. He's literally a rookie. And Vladdy's a year younger than him. Like this is why Vladdy's gonna get paid so much. I wonder, you know, I think you make some good points there. I wonder where it leads. I wonder like what's the point? What's the midpoint that would make both sides really uncomfortable? What's the point that would make both sides really have to think about it? Like 4-10 over 11 years? Does that give Vladdy's attention? Are the Blue Jays willing to even contemplate that? Like, I don't know. I think when I'm wondering, and this is all speculation, but I just wonder, is that the kind of number where, you know, something could actually get done? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where it goes.
So does that suggest that you are now thinking of Vlad as a $400 million player?
Yeah.
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 Because, I've been kind of operating around like something akin to the Devers deal, but like a bit more, you know? So the Devers deal is 13.5 over 10. So like 31.35. If you want to make it like a 12-year deal, that would work out to 375 for Vlad. If you want to make it a 10-year deal, like maybe it's 10 years 350, maybe it's 12 years 385, 390. Like, but you're thinking this is now above 400.
He's just so close to free agency, you know. And I think Devers is always going to be a good comp. It's not an unreasonable comp, it's not an insulting comp by any stretch, but it's kind of like the Juan Soto thing too. Like, we can pass this thing through dollars per war. We can pass it through comps. We can pass it through all these like really rigorous and useful tests. But at the end of the day, the question is really, what does it take to get a deal done? What does it take to get a deal across the finish line? And I don't know. I think if you offer Vladdy the Devers deal right now, I just don't think it happens. I think he's that close to free agency where Devers is 313. Juan Soto might be double that. Like, I think you roll the dice and see what happens.
The other thing, given his age, and I'm sure Soto is doing this as well, given his age, if I'm on Vlad's side, I'm using my leverage to build in opt-outs where I can. Yes. Like, obviously, they're incredibly player-friendly, but like, Vlad is in an amazing negotiating position right now, just as Juan Soto is. And I think that opt-outs are really powerful for players, and something that like, the players at the very top of the market can bargain pretty hard for. So I would be looking to get some opt-outs in there as well, so that maybe I end up re-entering the free agent market at like 28 or 30 and actually increasing my salary going forward.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question as far as where you put those opt-outs too, because if you put them after years 3 and 5, you're handing the player a lot of leverage at that point, a lot of flexibility, and that can be a really tough call. But, you know, especially in free agency, I don't think you have to do opt-outs as much for someone who's before free agency because they just don't have the same leverage as a free agent does. But if you get to free agency and Juan Soto's insistent on an opt-out, I mean, I think you have to be willing to contemplate that.
All right, so let's shift our focus now to the Blue Jays bullpen, which is where we've actually seen some movement this winter. The Blue Jays have signed a deal in their bullpen. Eric Swanson returning for a year, $3 million. But Jordan Romano not returning. He has been non-tendered. He is now a free agent, you know, one of the best closers in franchise history, one of the best closers across MLB from, 21 through 23. Were you surprised, Ben, by either of these moves?
No, I was not. I think that Jordan Romano had a great career with the Blue Jays and just incredible story, right? To come from Markham, Ontario, to be the closer, to get some huge saves for this team.
35,000 are on their feet here with the Blue Jays a strike away. And he got it. Jordan Romano comes out of the bullpen and picks up the save. Alec Manoah, 7.
But from the point that he got the arthroscopic surgery in the summer, it really became a question of, hey, what's this going to mean? Is he going to be a non-tender candidate? What is his health going to be? So I can't say I'm surprised. I think that, you know, ultimately he was slated to throw a bullpen in front of some Blue Jays officials at the player development complex in November. And, you know, evidently that didn't go to the point that they were confident tendering him a contract around $8 million. So doesn't mean that they don't believe he's going to be a good player at some point. Doesn't mean that Jordan Romano won't be getting huge saves in the major leagues next year. But at that $8 million price tag, the Jays clearly decided that it wasn't worth their while.
Yeah, I think it ultimately just came down to value. And it's kind of like what we were talking about in the first half with just like how disciplined and, you know, pragmatic and objective the Blue Jays are and how much they trust their model and their projections. You know, they just kind of looked at like what they value a win. So like say they value a win right at $8 million, right? So they said, well, do we project Jordan Romano to be worth a win next year, coming off of a lost season and elbow surgery and, you know, everything that they had learned from the medicals and, you know, the bullpens that he had thrown and the state that he's currently in? I think they looked at that projection and they looked at $8 million and came to the conclusion that they can get more wins out of those $8 million. So, you know, it's kind of cold and dispassionate, but, you know, 28 front offices do it this way. You strip away the name, you strip away, like you said, you know, the passport, where he's from, how long he's been with the organization, how many Romano jerseys he's sold, the light show. Like, you just look at it as we project player X to produce Y wins in 2025, and he stands to earn Z. And if the right salary is higher than the value you put on how many wins you expect the player to make, then you just do not make that deal.
Well, and presumably the other teams in the industry agreed with the Blue Jays assessment there because, you know, it wasn't a secret that he was a non-tender candidate. So, you know, if another team had valued him at $8 million, they could have picked up the phone, sent the Blue Jays some international signing space, you know, and they could have traded for him. So, yeah, I think we'll soon see how Jordan Romano does on the free agent market. Well, it might not be soon, actually. It might be a couple months, but we'll see how he does in free agency. He might end up with a two-year deal. The Blue Jays, you know, that would have been an interesting avenue for them to pursue, where you kind of circumvent the arbitration process and you sign yourself up for a couple years. And I think that would have been an interesting option. Not sure how aggressively that was pursued, but I would expect that another team, let's say for argument's sake, it's the Texas Rangers, maybe they sign him for a two-year deal worth $12 million. And maybe it's 6-6, and, you know, he's getting more total guaranteed dollars that way. Maybe there's some incentives in there.
Yeah.
Based on games finished, you know, appearances, any of those things, that could be a good way to do it. But hopefully he lands on his feet. I mean, certainly a well-liked part of that team and well-liked by the fans, well-liked by the players, and wish him well wherever he lands.
Yeah, absolutely echo that. Like, I've known Jordan since, like, I don't know, 2016 when he was in Dunedin. He was still a starter.
Yeah.
He was trying to, like, learn a change up. Like, he was a prospect coming up the system. I remember talking to him back then and watching him go through this journey of converting to relief, you know, the Rule 5 experience with the Rangers, and then becoming literally one of the best closers in baseball and saving over 100 games for the Blue Jays and being one of the best closers in Blue Jays history. Like, it's a remarkable story that a kid from Markham did that. So like all the best to him, and always a pleasure to deal with him. Like just a first rate, a first class professional. So yeah, all the best. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just to really, for someone who is intense as he is on the mound, like off the mound, like he was actually just really chill, like not a, you know, not a difficult temperament, easy guy to be around, well-liked by his teammates. You wouldn't guess it from the persona that he puts on the mound.
Yeah. He's not the guy you see on TV. He's actually kind of introverted. He's, you know, he's actually like kind of quiet in a way. But I think, you know, loosens up around people that he knows really well. And like I said, very chill, likes to joke around. So it'll be interesting to see where his career goes. It does leave a rather gaping hole at the back end of the Blue Jays bullpen. They have brought back Eric Swanson on a one-year, $3 million deal. It seems like he's left the majority of his struggles last season behind in the first half of the season. You know, you look at when he went to Buffalo to like work on his mechanics and iron out some of the pitch tipping that was going on. He returns, and from the point they return to the big league level, he pitches to a 2.55 ERA with a 27.5% strikeout rate over his final 27 outings. So to me, like, if the Blue Jays can get that version of Swanson for all of 2025, I think that is $3 million well spent in a setup role.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, if they get that version, for sure. So, you know, we'll see. They must really believe in him, because I think if you look at the numbers purely through an analytical lens at what he did last year, that doesn't scream $3 million reliever to me. You know, being transparent, it really doesn't. I think the performance was not there. Now, we all know this was a year where he went through a lot of personal stress, and we all know he's capable of more. So this is a bet that he's something better than what he showed in 2024, where, yeah, the results were not, he didn't have a good year. It was not a good season. So they're betting that he can do more in 2025, and be very interested to see how that bet turns out, because they really need him. They just don't have, you start looking at that pathway to, I guess Chad Green is the closer by default now. You start looking at that pathway, and you hinted at this earlier, but it's like they just do not have a lot of answers as far as setup relief, especially after you cut ties with Yenesis Cabrera and Jordan Romano.
Yeah, Yenesis Cabrera, who like led the Blue Jays in appearances and innings this year, incredibly, out of the bullpen, I should say. And yeah, like I think the thing that the Blue Jays were encouraged by Swanson, even throughout his struggles, was that the stuff was maintained. You know, it was same velocity, it was the same action shape on his pitches. It was really just location and tipping, and obviously just everything that he had been going through that year personally, and then with, you know, struggling on the mound for the first time in like I probably, you know, since he was trying to be a starter. So I think that, you know, with all that behind him, I think he's a decent bet on the deal that the Blue Jays got him on. But yeah, you're right. The Blue Jays need to keep adding to the back end. I think they need two more late game leverage arms, not just one. And I think that one of those arms has to have closing experience, at least, if not be like a closer, literally, because right now, you know, Chad Green is the de facto closer. He has 28 saves in his career. The only other player on the roster with double-digit saves is Swanson, who has 10, and the only other pitchers in the organization with any saves are Zach Pop and Brendan Little, who have one apiece. So I think they need more like late-game, high-leverage experience at the back end of that bullpen. Ideally, someone who can step into the closer's role and push Chad Green into a setup role where you can kind of attack pockets of righties in the 7th and 8th. And then in addition to that, like a second late game leverage arm who could fill a setup role, because you just need at least four with Green, Swanson, and then two fill in the blanks, because somebody's going to be hurt. Somebody's going to be struggling. Somebody's going to be tipping. Like, you just need to build out that depth. The Blue Jays don't have it right now.
Yeah. I think two is a safe kind of minimum. I mean, really, you could say they need four or five or six or seven relievers, and I wouldn't debate that. I mean, I think that they're really thin. They had a bullpen that, you know, just objectively was, you know, 29th or 30th in most important relief categories in baseball last year. This is not a good bullpen. They don't necessarily have reinforcements just bubbling up in the minor leagues where you're like, hey, this guy is like there. Now, Yariel Rodriguez to the bullpen, that would help. That would add some depth. But you want to augment. And I agree, like, if you can add closing experience, that helps. I think really, to me, where I zero in is like swing and miss. And it's that K percentage minus BB percentage, where you just want to have someone who's controlling the strike zone consistently. Probably means a big fastball, probably means a nasty breaking pitch. You know, pitchers can do this in different ways. Maybe it's a cutter, or like, you know, a, you know, Duran or Class A, or there are different ways to do this, but probably you're talking about big velo and a nasty breaking ball. And you know, so okay, Jeff Hoffman, Tanner Scott, these guys are the best relievers out there. The Jays obviously, and this applies to so many free agents, right? The Jays have some level of interest in these guys, because they have some level of interest in virtually every free agent. But from the conversations that I've had, doesn't seem likely that they're going to go out there and splash out 56 over four for Jeff Hoffman, or hey, we're going to set the market for Tanner Scott. It's like, you know, 4 years, 52 or whatever. I don't see that as the pathway that they're going to take, just given all the other needs that they're trying to juggle and their interest in starting pitching. But I mean, ideal world, you know, that's kind of what they need, is someone who is just an elite bat misser, because you know, that's what Romano was at his best, and they don't really have that right now. I think even if you're optimistic on some of the guys they have existing in their bullpen, you know, they don't have that dominant shutdown. We need an inning and a third to get through Judge and, you know, let's say Judge and Stanton, because I don't, you know, I think Soto's going to be a Met, but let's say it's Judge and Stanton, and it's the bottom of the eighth inning, and you got to get a couple big outs. Like, who are you going to? Who's the guy in that situation?
Yeah, I agree with you that I'd be surprised if the Blue Jays were like playing at the very top of the reliever market with you know, guys like Tanner Scott and Jeff Hoffman. But I do think they should be playing in the second tier with like a Clay Holmes or a Blake Treinen or a, you know, David Robertson, Chris Martin.
Yeah.
Like, I do think that they should absolutely get someone from that group.
I think that's doable.
Yeah, no, and especially for the veteran guys, like, it should be doable on a one-year deal, really.
Absolutely. Robertson, Treinen, Martin, yeah. I could see them landing one of those guys. Like, Treinen on a two-year deal, man, that would be pretty good. Like, Treinen,
he's 37. He's 37.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you're getting him on a one-year deal is the thing, but, like, 20 over 2, I'd do that. He's nasty. Blake Treinen is so good.
He's really, really good, and I think he would be really good on like a one-year, $12 million deal. yeah. You know, I don't know if I want to go to 2 years with him, but like, we'll see. You know, it's such a volatile position group, I should say. You know, you look at this year's World Series, it was Treinen closing for the Dodgers and Luke Weaver closing for the Yankees. And who was talking about Luke Weaver at this time last year? So, you know, like, leverage arms can sometimes literally just come out of nowhere, but Blue Jays would be best not to bet on that. I think they need some certainty and some experience at the back end. I also think they need like one more sort of middle relief option. And I think that one of these three pitchers, the two back end guys and the middle relief guy, needs to throw left-handed, because you've lost Cabrera, you've lost Tim Mesa. That's 87 and a third innings off of last year's bullpen. You need a lefty to sop up some of those innings. Right now you're looking at like Brendan Little as your go-to lefty, and I don't know that there's another one on the 40. Easton Lucas is lefty, Brandon Eisert. So those are your lefties. Little, Eisert, Lucas. So I think you need one of these three bullpen additions to be left-handed.
Yeah, I think that would really help. And I think, like, I mean, I almost want to fast forward to, you know, the postseason, because I'm like, oh, okay, you're going up against Tucker and Alvarez, it's the ALCS, like, who's getting these outs? But at the same time, like, that's kind of too far in the future. You have to get there first, and you can address that at the deadline and get someone who's really dealing in July. So I actually think the first step is just get good relievers, get enough relievers that you're having capable relief work, and that John Schneider is not making things up and, you know, trying to patchwork this thing on the fly. So just get enough decent relievers. I agree with you. Ideally, one of them is left-handed, but just fill in the gaps, just raise that floor, I think, is step one.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, to wrap up, I got a couple of free agents that I want to pitch you on, Ben, that are maybe, you know, mid-tier, aren't discussed as much, that I think the Blue Jays should be pursuing. this winter. Awesome. You know,
let's hear it.
As we said, we've been sitting on some takes. So first and foremost, Ha-Seong Kim. And if you listen to our like season wrap / off-season setup episode, I was banging the drum for Kim then. The difference is I was doing it on like a 9-figure deal because it was prior to the shoulder surgery that he's had. Now he's had shoulder surgery, and assuming that like all is well with that, this, you know, it's expected to be just a typical rehab and recovery, and that he should come back looking like himself, I think there is a tremendous buy low opportunity here on Ha-Seong Kim, because he's no longer going to cost the 9 figures that he would have before he had surgery. I mean, he's going to cost much less than that, and I would be really comfortable going to like multiple years, somewhere in like the $18-19 million AAV range, assuming he's healthy, for multiple years, because like you, like players like him who are spectacular defenders and like maybe just a little bit above league average bats at shortstop are super rare. You know, like Dansby Swanson's making $25 million a year to be that guy over like 7 years. So
Trevor Story.
Right. I think that it works this year because you can stick him at second or third base. And then he's kind of your post Bo Bichette plan, and you have him right there. And if Bo gets hurt this year, he easily slides over to shortstop. You don't have a huge drop off. And I think that the surgery has actually just like created this really intriguing opportunity to structure like a creative incentive laden deal with, you know, rewards for games played, plate appearances, awards voting, all-star selections, whatever, that could present a win-win opportunity for both sides if Kim returns healthy and productive. So I think that Ha-Seong Kim should be a serious target for the Blue Jays.
I give this idea the full ATL stamp of approval. Nice. I think it's a really good idea. I think he's young, which is nice, and you look at the projections, 2.9 WAR projected by Steamer. Doesn't strike out a lot, plays really good defense, helps you on the bases, does a lot of things well. So, yeah, I mean, that's more WAR than you're going to see projected for Anthony Santander. That's more WAR than you're going to see projected for Teoscar Hernandez. So, you know, it's appealing. And if the cost is, I mean, let's say, is it 57 over 3? Like, sure. Yeah, no problem. Which, for the record, if the Jays could get Santander or Teoscar for 57 over 3, I would also fully endorse that move. Because, you know, those guys are good players too. I'm not trying to knock them. But, I like the idea. Ha-Seong Kim, it's a good call.
Yeah, I'd be willing to even go like 75 over 4, honestly.
Of those guys.
90 well, over Teo, 5? No, not for any of those guys. No.
For Santander, I would, though.
75 over 4 for Santander is fine value. Yeah, I'd be fine with that. But I'd rather do 75 over 4 for Kim. I'd even go 90 over 5, honestly. Like, he's a terrific player, man. Like, he's a sublime defender at multiple positions. He can hop around. Like you said, super low strikeout, super high walk, high contact, really low chase rates, good speed. He steals bases. He's on the right side of 30. Like, this is why I was advocating so much for the Blue Jays to sign JT Realmuto when he became a free agent, because like catchers like him just don't come around very often. Like, they aren't acquirable very often. You know, it's very hard to get like a guy who checks all of those boxes. So I just think that this is a really unique opportunity.
90 over 5. He is at Rogers Center next week for a press conference. Scott Boras is hanging the jersey over him. We're sitting there asking Ross Atkins and Ha-Seong Kim questions. Like, I think that would get it done. I'm not saying it's a bad idea.
I'll drive him, and I'll also have Paul Sewald in the car, because that's another guy that I think that the Blue Jays should target. He has what I've already told you is my favorite attribute in a pitcher, a really unique fastball. Like, he's got that like flat vertical approach, so he gets that like invisible effect. A lot of swing and miss on the heater. When he elevates it, it doesn't drop as much as hitters expect it to. It's kind of like plays a little trick on their eyes. And when he's been at his best, he's checked that strikeout minus walk rate box that you were mentioning. Really low walk rates, really high strikeout rates. The thing about 2024 is he had a series of injuries that kiboshed his season. And things obviously didn't go well last year because he was hurt and he was pitching hurt. So that's depressed his market. And when we're talking about Blake Treinen or Clay Holmes for like a $12 or $13 million AAV, I think Seawald could be like a $6 to $8 million AAV, and a really good bet for a bounce back season with better health. So that's another guy I think the Blue Jays should target.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I think that's a fair read on the overall situation on his market. I think really well regarded as, someone in the clubhouse, and he's put up some really good numbers in his career. So the projections like him, think that he can continue striking guys out, and he would certainly help the Jays. So, I think that makes sense.
Like if he was coming off of his 2023 and entering free agency, we would be talking about him in the same range as Holmes and Treinen.
Yep.
Like he would be one those $12 to $14 million AAV guys.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if those, I think Holmes is more like 10, 11, and I think Treinen is more like 8 to 9, but certainly he would be in that conversation for like a multi-year deal. And this is where it underscores the volatility of all this stuff, right? Because like, where was Jeff Hoffman a year and a half ago? Where was Tanner Scott a year and a half ago? These guys were nothing. Now they hit free agency at the perfect time. They're gonna make so much money. Good for them. But you know, in a couple of years, one of those deals might look pretty bad. Carlos Estevez hits free agency at a great time. Now, if he gets 33-for-3, that deal might look bad within 4 months. You know, so that's why the Blue Jays. They don't say it in these words, but my read is that's why the Blue Jays don't really operate in these waters. That's why they haven't ever spent more than Chad Green's $21 million as far as a guarantee on a reliever in free agency, or as an extension for that matter. They just don't spend big on relievers because there's so much volatility there. And I get it. When you have other needs to address, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Blue Jays' downfall is not spending on relief. I get it. There's a lot of volatility there, but at the same time, you got to find some way to build a bullpen. So they're going to have to spend in free agency to some extent this year.
Okay. So if we are talking about giving someone like 12 mil a year or 13 or 14, how about giving that to Michael Conforto to play left field for you? You look at his 2024 and, it's an okay season. It's not like jumping off the page, but his actual numbers trailed really far behind his expected ones. He obviously wasn't playing in a great ballpark for power, particularly from the side of the plate that he hits from. But you look at some of the stuff beneath the surface, and he upped his max exit velo last year. He had a 12% barrel rate. I think he definitely would have hit more than 20 bombs if he wasn't playing in San Francisco. The Blue Jays desperately need to hit more home runs. They need power going into 2025. So I'd be willing to give him like a year or two at, $12 to $14 million AAV, hide his defense in left, and let him hit like 25 to 30 bombs at Rogers Center.
Interesting. So I think this is the one I'm least convinced
there
on.
You go.
not to say that I'm like out or like that I would rule him, off the board or anything, but I think you got to aim higher with your main position player ad. Cause like, okay, so in this scenario, are you also adding a second bat, or is he like the main offensive addition?
Good question. I'm also adding Ha-Seong Kim. So I got Kim, Conforto, Treinen, and Seawald. And then I'm going to get like some, reliever who I believe is going to like beat his projection for, a million or two a year.
Okay. So 30. Yeah, well, and then what about the starting rotation? That just stays the same in this scenario?
Yeah. In this scenario, I'm not adding a starter unless I can tap into the, the unique opportunity fund and go get Corbin Burns.
Right.
But I would not do that for Max Fried.
Because this is going to cost you like 40. This will push you basically to the Jays payroll limit, depending on how you allocate things. So you could do that.
Maybe I'm trading for my starter, I'm signing Kim Seawald, Conforto, Trinan and another, you know, reliever, like totally unheralded, like lower tier reliever, spending my like $45 million that way. And then, yeah, I'm trying to trade for a starter.
Okay, interesting scenario. And I think it kind of illustrates, it's useful. I'm not trying to pin you to this as like, this is your number one.
Definitely going to happen. Whoever is like writing on their notes app right now and going to post it on Twitter, tell the world I said this is absolutely definitely what's going to happen.
Okay, perfect. So, yeah. So, but I think it's
don't
interesting.
Do that. Please, please don't.
Yeah.
Continue.
It is interesting as a kind of thought experiment because it illustrates the challenge in front of the Blue Jays, right? Their offense isn't good enough. Their bullpen isn't good enough. They also need to improve the rotation. So, it's actually, they have a lot of work to do. And like, my first reaction when I hear you say like Michael Conforto and Ha-Sung Kim are the offensive additions to the Blue Jays, I'm like, man, but that's just like, that lineup's just not good enough.
You got some power, you got some contact, you got some speed, you got a bit of defense with Kim, you got some versatility, got a lefty,
you got a 31-year-old in Conforto, you got a 29-year-old in Kim. Like, you know, I get it, but you also at that point, you're starting the season with two guys who are injured in Varsho and Kim, so don't love that aspect of it. Then
fair.
The left-handed hitting part of Conforto I like, but I still kind of feel like they're a bat short in that situation. And I'm looking at the projections here on Steamer, and he's projected for a 750 OPS, a 111 WRC plus, and some pretty bad defense. So I guess if you find Conforto some DH at bats, then maybe that helps the overall picture. But then is that just not kind of redundant with Spencer Horwitz and that you have these two lefty bats who don't really play defense and who are best used in a platoon situation? So I'm not trying to be a naysayer here. I'm just like, I don't know. This is where I'm almost like, man, this is where like the Santander, it's the put your head on the pillow bat. Santander, let's say that's going to cost you, I don't know, is it 22? And then do you try to do Santander with Severino, all of a sudden you're 38, and then you go really cheap in the bullpen with another like $3 million arm, and you hope that Davis Schneider hits lefties. Like, I don't know.
I don't know if you're accumulating as much war as I am with that gambit is the problem.
Yeah, right. How much war are you getting?
So let's say Conforto is like a 2-in player.
Fangraphs has him as 1.2 on Steamer.
All right, fair enough. We'll use Steamer. 1.2. Where they got Kim at? 2.9. So, yeah. All right. So, what have I got here? I've got 1.2 plus 2.9. So, I got 4.1. What do they got Trinan at?
Let's see. We're doing this live, folks. This is, you're hearing. They like Trinan. It's 0.7.
Nice. And Seawald?
He is 0.3. So, you got 5.1 total war.
So I've got 5.1, and say I get like 0.2 from the other middle relief guy that I sign. So give me 5.3 war. And I'm betting, by the way, that I'm going to beat this projection. Like, that's like, I'm betting that these players are going to be better than they're projected. But I just added, 5.3 wins.
Right. And then if you go Santander, that's 2.5. Then, let's go Manaea. Let's go Manaea. Santander, Manaea.
So that's 2.
Manaea is 2. Okay, so you're at 4.5. But now you've spent...
You spent like $40 million.
20. It's just 20. Probably spent... Yeah, no, exactly. It's really expensive. So you might have eked out an extra war there. But this is where it goes back to my discussion before about the... On paper, you can build it and you can finesse it so that you get that extra war. And that war matters. That win matters to the Blue Jays. But to me, I would say... just get the guy that you are really convicted is going to beat the projection. And if that happens to be a Blake Trinan or a Ha-Sung Kim, get him. If it happens to be a Santander or a Sean Manaea, get him. But I think it comes down to finding the guy that you really believe will beat that projection.
Yeah, they should probably just sign Juan Soto.
Oh, that would simplify everything.
Yeah, that would be a lot easier than these really convoluted scenarios that we're coming up with. But, you know, like I said... I tend to agree with you that it is likely that the Blue Jays go the route of, you know, like trying to sign like 3 or 4 second tier guys. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't aggressively pursue the first tier guys as they are now. And, you know, if they don't come away with Juan Soto, which I don't expect them to, I think they should go hard after Corbin Burns before they go down the road of the, you know, trying to Frankenstein together your 6-7 wins.
My final Soto projection, just so that it's
sure,
so that it's here for the record, 675 over 15 to the Mets on December 10th.
What do you think the Blue Jays offer?
600.
So they're 75 million off. I bet they would offer a bit more than 600, because it's, I don't think 600 does it, right? Like, I think the Yankees or Dodgers grab them, you know, for more than that. So I think, like, I think you've got to be at like 625, 630 if you're going to really be playing in this sandbox. Like 630 over 14, that's 45 a year.
That's a real offer.
I think that is a good Toronto Blue Jays offer. $630 million over 14 years.
Man, I honestly, that's a good offer. There's a non-zero chance that you get him if that's the offer. But I think there's still like a 95% chance that the Mets go higher. So yeah, that's where I think the Mets go to 670. I think the Mets just go to whatever it takes. And I think that 675 will be the number where the other teams back off. I think the Yankees back off at 675. I think the Blue Jays back off at 675. And I think the Mets are still in there, and he becomes a Met for life and goes into Cooperstown with a Mets plaque in 20 years. You know, that's honestly what I think. I mean, we'll see. I'm wrong about this stuff all the time, but it's fun to follow for sure. And we'll see where it leads.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Steve Cohen's just going to like pull a Da Vinci off his wall and throw that in and say, here, take this. What do you want? You want a Lambo? I'll throw in a Lambo. What do you like? He's just going to start sweetening that pot with the non-salary things to the point that it's just an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big day for the Mets when Juan Soto signs.
We shall see. Winter meetings coming up in a couple of weeks. Sportsnet will obviously be down there. Shai and Ben providing tons of coverage at sportsnet.ca. Make sure you stay glued to that. And looks like it could be a rather active one. So maybe we'll be talking to you around then if the Blue Jays have made some maneuvers. But for now, that'll be it for us. Want to thank our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. He's Ben Nicholson-Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling, and this has been At the Letters.